middle of discussing last week, the Ramchal says that every human being is comprised of two very opposite parts, a gufin and a shama. The guf he describes as atzi va'ochur, earthy and low, and the neshama he describes as sichli v'zaka, intellectual or spiritual and pure or clear. We mentioned that there are two different yetzaharas that a person has. Yetzahara number one is the simple body, the human physical body. That itself is a yetzahara. It's not the type of yetzahara that purposely tries to make a person do averis. It's not the type of yetzahara that has any sentience whatsoever. It's not an aware type of yetzahara, but rather it's simply the pull that a person feels because he's trapped inside this physical body made up of dirt, which pulls the human being towards physical, materialistic, earthy, dirt things. That itself comprises one yetzahara. There's another yetzahara that is a malach from Shemayim, an aware, sentient yetzahara that is designed to try to make people do averis. The difference between the first yetzahara and the second, amongst others, is that tzaddikim, as they grow spiritually, they conquer, they sublimate the yetzahara that's comprised of their guf. The materialistic part of them gets weaker and weaker, and in order to maintain bechira, in order for God to be able to maintain within these people free will, Hashem strengthens the angel, the malach yetzahara, in order to keep the playing field even, so to speak, so that they will still have bechira and nisyonis, and be able to overcome this yoinus and reap reward. The guf, we said, even though the guf is made out of dirt and it's earthy and materialistic, nevertheless, it's still on a higher level than the guf of animals. Even the body of a human being is on a higher level than the body of other creatures. Now, there's a Zohar HaKadosh that states that parallel to the neshama that a person has from the side of good, a person also has a neshama that comes from the side of bad. The nefesh, ruach, and neshama that a person has that's spiritual, a person also has, we'll call it a physical or an evil neshama also, that is constantly battling the other neshama. This is what the pasuk means. Reino sati lefanecha hayoim es hachayim v'yasatoiv es hamoves v'yasara. The chayim and the toiv that Hashem gives us is the part of the neshama, or that neshama that comes from a very high spiritual place, and the moves and the ra, the evil that a person is presented with in this world, that a person encounters in this world, that's the neshama that comes from the bad place, from the other side. Now, the Shem Yishmuel brings a very interesting discussion, he says, amongst the philosophers. He says there are three different opinions as to what the Yetzirah is. There's one opinion that the Yetzirah is the nature, the physical nature of a person, as we described. There's another that says the Yetzirah is a power, some kind of energy from above that causes a person to do sin, similar to the angelic Yetzirah that we mentioned. And the third is the Koichos HaChitzoinim Sheroidfim Es HaOdom. And he gives an example of what he means. He says that if you have a cup of wine, a cup of wine is emptied out, suddenly you see all the flies and the insects coming to attracted to the cup of wine. He says that the koiches hachitzoinim, the anti-forces against good, they're attracted to the emptiness inside a person's neshama. If a person has a little emptiness, the koiches hachitzoinim are automatically attracted to it. And he says that the higher level a person is, the more the koiches hachitzoinim come and are attracted, because the sweeter the wine, the more the bugs are attracted. Water doesn't get any insects attracted to it. It says it's the nature of goodness that it attracts evil the evil tries to counterbalance it and counteract it. It's kind of a balance in nature. That the better a person is, the more the forces of evil that are on this world, the koichos hachitzonim, come to attack him. And the Shem Yishmuel concludes that all three yetzaharas are inside a person on three different levels. On the lowest, most physical level, we said even on a spiritual level, there's a low level, the nefesh ha-bahamis, the simple vital force, the life force, that's not really spiritual, it's a physical type of soul. That attracts, in that neshama, in that nefesh, there is the physical body of a person that pulls that nefesh to do the wrong thing. The highest level of a person, the neshama, the most spiritual level, has the koiches hachitzonim constantly attacking it. Those are those powers of evil, those forces of evil that are constantly trying to balance out the forces of good. There's a balance in nature. And the middle part of a person, the ruach of a person, has the malach min hashamayim that's sent specifically with the mission to be machshel a person. If this, according to this, we can understand pshat in the Chazal. We said one pshat last week. We have another pshat. Why it is that a Talmidei Chachamim and Klal Yisrael have greater Yetzaharas than Amei Haaretz and Goyim. It says that the Yetzahara ignores the Goyim and it focuses its attention on Klal Yisrael. We know also Kol HaGadol Mechaveira Yitzray Gadol Mimeno. Why this is so is understood, according to what the Shem Yishmuel is saying, that if we're talking about koiches hachitzonim, forces of evil in the world, that want to balance out nature, and want to attack the good inside a person, then the better a person is, the more intense the forces of evil he's going to attract. And everybody does aveiros. There's nobody that doesn't do aveiros. There's nobody perfect. And an imperfection in a person means, the word chet, the Mefarshim say, literally means to miss something. You missed. Like the archers of the Shevet, from Shevet bin Yomin, it says, they could take a slingshot and hit a hair's breadth, they wouldn't miss. When Yaakov Avinu told Lavan that none of your animals that I watched are missing, he used the Lashon, they're not missing, he used Lashon chet. Chet means something's missing. And the reason is because when a person does an aveira, part of his neshama is dislocated. Part of his neshama runs away. We said last week that the fight between the guf and the neshama, the Yetzirah and the Yetzer Tov, is like a tug of war. And there's two ways to win a tug of war. You can either make the other person let go of the rope, or you can pull him over to your side. If the Yetzer Tov wins the tug of war, it's because he pulled the Yetzirah over to the side of good, which we will discuss more in the future, how the Yetzirah actually becomes purified and sanctified. If the Yetzirah wins the Melchama, Rachmon Litzlan, it's not because he polluted a Neshama. He can't pollute a Neshama. A Neshama is untouchable, but what the Neshama does is when it sees it being pulled, itself being pulled over to the other side, it lets go. And a person can end up Chas V'Shalom Neshamaless. And that's an extreme. But even on non-extreme levels, as a person does an Aveira, part of the Neshama is Nistalik, part of the Neshama lets go. And that vacuum that the Neshama leaves in a Tzaddik that does a little Aveira, in that place, in that vacuum, in that hole, in that Chet, that's the place that attracts all the Koiches HaChitzonim, because the Koiches HaChitzonim want very, very much. They're attracted to the power of good that's inside the Tzaddik, to the old chush of a wine. And that little aveira that a person does, that allows, that creates the hole, that creates the little crevice that all the koiches hachitzonim run into and try to attack, because they're attracted to it. Shem Yishmuel says that this is why the halacha is that when somebody dies, only a yid is metame tumas mes. A dead body of a guy is not metame. Only dead body of a yid. Isn't that a funny thing? One would think that a yid is on a higher level. A yid wouldn't be metame. A guy may be, if you're going to have a choice between one or the other, you would say a guy is metame. No, says the Shem Yishmuel, the reason is because since a yid had a holy neshama, upon the absence of that neshama, upon the exit of that neshama, it leaves that hole, like the empty cup of wine, that all the koiches hachitzoinim come to occupy. The holy neshama of a yid leaves that hole that the evil in nature tries to counterbalance. When the neshama of a guy leaves, there's no hole left. It's just a physical thing. So a yid, the holier you are, the more potential you have to attract the koiches hachitzoinim, the evil forces in the world. Because the sweeter the wine, the more the koiches hachitzoinim want to come. All you need in order to attract them is a little emptiness. So Shem Yishmuel says emptiness comes upon death. And the koiches hachitzoinim come to occupy that space. But we're saying that that emptiness also comes upon the act of doing an aveira. And just like a person, when a person's dead, the koiches hachitzoinim come in according to the Shem Yishmuel. A person does an aveira. And koiches hachitzoinim can also come in. That's called Hagadol Mechaveira Yitzrei Gadol Mimeno. And now, we continue. Says Shekol Echod Mehem Yita Beteva Letzidoi. Each one of these two, the body and the soul, lean towards their nature. The Hainu Haguf Lachumrius. The body leans towards physical pleasures, physical things, material things. The Haneshama Lesichlius. The neshama leans, it's attracted towards intellectual, spiritual things. And here we need to mention the words of the Medrash Rabbah. There's a pasuk in Koheles. Kol omol odom lefihu. All the work that a person does in this world is to feed himself. V'gam ha-nefesh lo simolei. But the neshama, the soul of a person, is not satiated by physical labor. Not only physical labor, by all the food that a person has, by all the riches that a person has, the neshama is not satiated. Now, this pasuk was written by Shlomo HaMelech, the Chacham Mikol Adam, which means that it must have in it a message that's a lot deeper than just appears at the surface. Because if we were to ask anybody, is the neshama satisfied from bananas? The person would say, of course not, the neshama wants something more than bananas. And yet that's what the pasuk seems to say. Comes the medrash, and the medrash explains what the pasuk means. Moshol aruni shenosa bas malachim. It's a moshol. You have a princess marrying a caveman. Afal pi shema achilo kol madone oilam. Even though the caveman feeds the princess all the goodies in the world, she's not going to be satisfied. She has higher standards than what a caveman can fulfill. Lama, why? Because she's a princess, and she's used to greater things than this caveman can provide. So too, whatever a human being on this world can do for his soul, in a yotzi dechayvasoi, he's not going to satisfy the soul. Lama shehi milamayla, because the neshama is from upstairs. I'll explain to you what this means. Imagine a caveman marrying a princess. It's a very romantic thing. There's no question that the princess's father, he wasn't in favor of the shidduch. Princess's father, he wanted her to marry some prince from some other province or some baron's son or son of some lord. But no, she wants this guy. She wants this caveman. She doesn't look at a purity of blood or purity of station. She just looks at a person's personality, and she's all hyped up about this, and she's doing the most wonderful thing in the world. And finally, the father gives in. You know, the father loves the daughter, and it's a little embarrassing for him, very embarrassing. Especially since at the wedding they get together, you know, they send out the invitations. His Lord Majesty so-and-so invites you to the wedding of his daughter. Hakala, Habsula, Hamuhulala, Chveis. Esther Malka, the princess. With the Chosin. Chosin's usually written first, but if the girl is the daughter of the king, she's probably written first. With the Chosin, Habocher, Hachoha, Hamuflug, Betoyev, Yir, Shemayim, Wag. The caveman. They get together by the wedding. It's all romantic. He comes in his loincloth with his club, and she comes with all the silks and the pomp. They are married, and they go off to his cave to live. Father offers them all the palaces in the world. No, they want to live in the cave. It's very romantic. So, everything's wonderful until she goes to sleep for the first time in that cave. She's not used to sleeping in a cave. She's used to sleeping on Sealy Posturpedic mattresses, big, thick ones, big queen-sized. Now, suddenly, in the middle of the night, you know what happens when you sleep on hard rock in a cave and cold? Your back gets stiff, and it's cold and smelly in a cave. And so she wakes up in the middle of the night, you know, like her back is this. Not what she expected. It's not so geschmack and romantic like she imagined. But the Chosin, he's not stupid. He may be caveman, but he's not stupid. So he sees that this wife of his, the Kala, she's not happy. And he figures, you know what? I know why she's not happy. Because she's not used to this type of stuff. I'm going to take care of her. So he goes out of his cave, takes his machete, chops down some, what do you call those things that grow in swamps? No, not reeds or straw or bamboo, anything you want, all those things. I wasn't thinking of any of the above. There's some other thing. But let's say all those things. He cuts down all those things, and he brings it back for her. Here's a mattress. And he sticks it under the car. Now, Carl, you know, sleeping on straw, sleeping on bamboo, it's not a geschmack thing. It's better maybe than a hard stone cave, but it's not so geschmack. And a hard stone cave, at least it doesn't stick into your back. Here, the bamboo sticks into her back, and she gets up. And she, I can't sleep. I can't sleep. I can't sleep, she says. I just can't. Her back is now bruised, scarred, and he's not stupid, this walk. So he goes out this time, and this time he brings a slingshot. He sees a rabbit hopping around in the middle of the night. He's very skillful. And he shoots it, bullseye, grabs the rabbit by the ears, the bloody carcass, and he brings it back to the Kala, and he says, look, I brought you a present. And she looks at this bloody carcass of a rabbit, and she starts crying. There she is in the cave. She's all dirty, she's smelly, you know, and now this bloody carcass of a rabbit comes. So the wag, he figures, you know what, this is not good enough for her, she needs better. So this time he goes out with his club. And he clubs, I don't know, some mid-sized animal or something. Let's say a deer. He clubs a deer on the head, he brings back the antlers. And he says, okay, we have furniture for the house. Now, the antlers, you know, they didn't bring it to a taxidermist over there. So it's like left, broken off and bloody and smelly. She sees it and she starts crying even more because she remembers the furniture that she used to have. Wag is not going to be defeated here. He goes out this time with his bow and arrow and he shoots like, I don't know what, a woolly mammoth. And he pulls out a couple of hairs and a couple of teeth. He makes jewelry, makes a necklace, and he brings back, here's a necklace. And the more he tries for her, the worse it gets. Because the more she tries, the more she's reminded of what she used to have. And this is the moshel. The woman is the neshama, the princess. The caveman is the guf. The chiddush of the pasuk that Shlomo HaMelech is telling us that the neshama is not satiated from bananas is that when the guf eats the bananas, it's trying to satiate the neshama. The guf feels the neshama's longing, the neshama's pangs for what it had before it came to this world. It was sitting with HaKadosh Baruch Hu in Shamayim, learning Torah. It was singing with the Malachim. And suddenly it comes to this world, this cave, this smelly, materialistic, gashmiistic world, and it knows what it's missing. And it hurts the neshama. The neshama is in pain. It's noita lativa, it says. The neshama wants to go back to where it came. It wants what it had. It's like the princess. Now, a human being feels this inside. So human beings are funny things, you know. Human beings are never happy. Take an animal, a nice cow. A cow, you give him some water, some grass, a nice shady spot under a tree, and some other cows for company, maybe, and he's happy. You ever see a cow that wants to be famous? You ever see a cow that wants to be rich? You ever see a cow that wants to travel across the world? You ever see a cow that wants to make history? You ever see a cow with any of these things? No! Cows aren't so... Cows are so better equipped for survival than human beings. No mental illnesses. See, veterinarian psychologists, no such thing. There's no such thing. A cow is just satisfied with bananas. But a human being's not. You know why? Because a human being has a neshama. The only difference between a human being and an animal is that a human being has a neshama. A human being has an animal also, an animal body, an animal nefesh, a life force like a cow does, but a human being has a neshama, and the neshama comes from upstairs. And what's happening is that the person feels some longing, some loss, there's something more than just food and water, and that's the neshama begging for Torah mitzvahs, and the human being feels this begging, the guf feels, and the guf figures, okay, you know what it wants? It wants a dead rabbit, it wants antlers of a deer, it wants a woolly mammoth necklace, it wants fame, it wants fortune, it wants riches, it wants to travel, it wants all of these esoteric type pleasures. This elusive phantom that the person is running after all his life. The reason why human beings run around looking to be happy, and they're not just happy with what a cow is happy with, is because a human being has a neshama. And the more the human being tries to satisfy the neshama, the more the neshama cries. You bring it $100, the neshama cries a little. You bring it $200, the neshama cries a little more. Hayesh loy money writes a masayim. If a person has $100, Chazal say he wants 200. If he has 200, he wants 400. The desire for money grows exponentially together with the money. It's not only money, all gashmias. A person's desire for a person's emptiness grows in proportion to the amount that he has. If a person has a little, he wants something. But if a person has more, he wants even more. If a person has $100 million, he wants another $100 million. The average person, average guy, maybe a civil service worker, that's what he wants, to be rich. He dreams of having $1 million. Ask a guy with $1 million what he dreams of. No, he has higher standards. He wants $10 million. Ask a guy with $10 million, he wants 20. Guy with 20, he wants $100 million. And the more a person has, the more a person wants. This is because Moshe Larun Ishinasa Bas Malachim. The neshama is always dying for ruchnius, and the human being is providing gashmius to try to satiate that spiritual desire that the neshama has. The neshama doesn't have it. And this is why. This is why people are a little crazy. If you go on a train, I see two people there. Maybe a guy, older man, a guy in his 50s, a certified public accountant. He has a pocket protector from his pens, wearing a yellow tie. A mamish, a clean-cut guy with a suit, you know, the shoes, what do you call those shoes with the laces and the little holes in them? There's a name for them, you know what I'm talking about. With all the Oxfords and all those designs. Mamish, a real upstanding member of the community. And by the next stop, the train stops and in walks a meshugana. One of these guys, maybe a hippie, with his long hair, had a skateboard he comes in, with his tattoos and his piercings and his rings and all of these things, and the headphones, you know, he wears the headphones around his neck until he comes to the train, then he puts them on his ears, with the goggle glasses and everything. I know hippies don't dress like that, but this guy, he's mamish all mixed up. Question, who's on a spiritually higher level? The normal guy or the meshugana? Well, as far as maybe ethics or morals, I don't want to stereotype, but let's do it anyway. And we'll assume that the certified public accountant is a law-abiding citizen, you know. He dots his I's and he crosses his T's, and the other guy is a crackhead or something. However, the neshama of the crackhead is working. The reason why he's such a lunatic is because his neshama is speaking out and it's dying. It wants something more than just food and water, and he doesn't know what to give it. So he tries with earrings, Earrings don't work, he tries with nose rings. The nose ring don't work, he tries with the eyebrow rings. The eyebrow rings doesn't work, he tries with rings all over the place. That doesn't work, he tries the skateboard. All of this is the neshama trying for some little spirituality. The certified public accountant, you know what he's like, this guy? Imagine our Chosin Kala, the Malki and Wag. After several years of marriage, one of two things are going to happen. Are they going to get divorced? Or, assuming that they stay in the cave, she's going to give up. She's going to become a cave person. That's all. She gives up. She's used to the cave. The first night she was uncomfortable. Second night she was a little less uncomfortable. And eventually she gets used to it. Now, all the neighbors are so happy with her. They say, you know what? There used to be, you remember when Malki, she was such a barbarian. She couldn't sleep nights. She was always crying and screaming. And when a wag would try to bring her presents, and whatever he would bring her didn't satisfy her. She was such a disenchanted, uncivilized, unsatisfied person. Now, Baruch Hashem, she's a regular, normal, civilized caveman. She's happy with the cave. She's happy with the dead rabbit. She's happy with everything. Baruch Hashem, he straightened her out. The princess in her was destroyed. It was killed. There's nothing fighting Olam Hazeh anymore inside her. So, that can happen to somebody. Eventually, they can be so used to Olam Hazeh that the part of them that fights against Olam Hazeh, that wants the spiritual stuff, it can be obliterated. It can be used to Olam Hazeh, and they become a completely Olam Hazeh-tik person. That's why, b'derech klal, only crazy college kids become balei tshuva. At least it's easiest for them. The reason is, because their neshama is still working. They didn't have a chance to stay in the cave all those years and get used to it. As a person gets older and older, so the neshama gets more and more used to Olam Hazeh. If you don't feed it, if you only feed it bananas, so self-preservation, it's going to get used to the bananas, it's going to become a cave person. And at least, even a person's crazy, at least his neshama is working. It's a mild chesaron, it depends how you look at it. But the neshama, the spiritual part of a person is working. It's fighting Olam Hazeh, and the confusion, the resultant confusion is what makes people crazy. People are mamish, they're split personality. And a person is, imagine, if you take two enemies, mamish enemies, you handcuff them together. And you tell them, okay, you guys are going to live with each other. And not only are they enemies because they don't like each other, forget about that. They're two totally different types of people. One of them likes to sit at home and read a book. Doesn't do nothing. The other one likes to go out, you know, camping, likes to go with the parties and everything. And they're sitting there handcuffed together forever. Can you imagine that? What kind of story that would be? What kind of story that would make? What kind of plot? A handcuffed, that's a goof in the neshama. So what happens? Somebody is going to change the personality of the other. Either that, or they're going to go on fighting forever. Fighting forever is the least likely possibility. What's probably going to happen is that somebody's going to pull the other one over to their side. The reason why people are so desirous of material things, and they're so desirous of these intangible pleasures, like being faint, things that animals don't have, the animals don't want, is because they have a neshama. Everything a person does is physical. Every work a person does is physical in this world. Talking about physical work. But the neshama is not going to be happy from all of this. Because the neshama, this is what Ramchal is saying, the neshama pulls towards Olam Haba, the guf pulls towards Olam Hazeh, and people in the middle get confused. Now you should know, the Sfasemes says, this medrash is brought down in a few different places with slightly different wording. The Sfasemes points out that the way the medrash is quoted in a certain place, it says that what the neshama is looking for is not merely Torah and mitzvahs, but in particular, but specifically, learning Torah, even more than mitzvahs. Mitzvahs itself will not satisfy in the neshama, but Torah, the way Torah learning will. Because Torah learning, even among spiritual things, such as Torah and mitzvahs, there are levels. And limud ha-Torah, The learning of Torah is on a much, much, much higher spiritual level. It comes from a much, much, much higher spiritual place than all the other mitzvahs. And when a person learns Torah, it has a much higher spiritual effect than any of the other mitzvahs. The other mitzvahs are considered physical in that sense. They affect a person, they take his body, it affects his body, it's of course a spiritual act, but can't compare it to the spiritual value of learning Torah. Learning Torah is the highest spiritual value. And he says that's what it means when it says that Talmud Torah is Meshivas Nefesh, Shivas Nofesh, because the Torah is what calms the soul, because the Torah is that royal standard that the princess is used to. And even if a person does all the mitzvahs, if he doesn't learn Torah, his soul is not going to be satisfied. It's still going to be in turmoil. Learning Torah comes from the highest place, it's the most spiritual of all mitzvahs, and a person needs the Torah, which is Meshivas Nofesh, in order to be able to satiate his neshama. Now, that's true regarding spiritual things, that even Torah and mitzvahs, there are different levels amongst them. Amongst physical things and intellectual things, there are also different levels. Not every spiritual thing is on the same level, not every physical thing or intellectual thing is on the same level either. The Chovas HaLevavos writes, the reason why people have a desire for knowledge, abstract knowledge, both Torah knowledge and non-Torah knowledge, is because of the Gemara. The Gemara says in Nida that before a person is born, Ner Dolok Al Roshoi, B'tsoifu Mabit Misoif Oilam V'yad Soifoi, that a human being sees everything in the world. They teach him, the Malach teaches him, Kol HaTorah Kula, the entire Torah. At the end, he forgets the Torah, he forgets everything, and he comes out into the world. Of course, there's a vort over here that has to, everybody should be asking. There's something missing. I just said, Gemara, that before a person's born, he sees the whole world, and they teach him the whole Torah. The Malach touches him, he forgets the Torah, and he comes out to the world. There's something missing to this picture. What about the whole world that he saw? How did he forget that? Satmar Rebbe Zatzal has a vart on this. He says, without Torah, you see nothing. Once you forget the Torah, you're blind. You can look at something, you don't understand anything about it. But that's what the Gemara says. And the Chovas HaLevavos says that this knowledge that a person had prior to his being born leaves an impact, leaves an impression on his neshama, on his personality, that he still desires what he used to have. That's why people go out and they have this thirst for knowledge, because they once knew everything that there is to know, and they want to recapture that. But even amongst knowledge, there's a big, big difference between Torah knowledge and non-Torah knowledge, secular knowledge. The Shemi Shmuel writes that it's two completely different types of stuff, to the essence, the material that they're made out of, two completely different types of things. It says, there are animals in the world that also have a lot of knowledge. There are insects that have knowledge. A spider knows how to spin a web. That's a tremendous amount of chokhmah. To spin a web was an amazing thing. But we wouldn't call that knowledge. We wouldn't call that wisdom. We'd call that more instinct. We'd call it some ingrained program or something to that effect. We wouldn't call that wisdom. We wouldn't say that the spider is wise because he can spin a web. Says the Shemi Shmuel, that all knowledge outside of Torah knowledge is like the spider spinning the web. It's physical knowledge. It's instinctive knowledge. It's of course, very valuable. Listen, what would a spider do without the web? It's very valuable. But the essence of the knowledge itself is physical. It's not spiritual. It's an instinctive type thing that comes from the low part of a person's intellect, which means the low part of a person's neshama. Torah knowledge is not just merely a different information. It's not just merely different information. It's a different type of information. It's a spiritual type information. Information that makes an impact on and comes from a person's neshama, the highest place. If a person knows the whole Encyclopedia Britannica, it's a wonderful, very useful thing. But he still doesn't know how to spin a web like a spider does. A spider doesn't know the Encyclopedia Britannica like the man does. But it's the same type of knowledge. It doesn't impact upon a person's soul. It doesn't come from his soul. A brain is also a physical thing. And even amongst neshamas, amongst the spiritual part of a person, there's a physical part of his spirituality. Nefesh HaBahamis. So therefore, it's not really even, technically, legally, it's not even really called wisdom, this type of wisdom. No more than a spider's ability to spin a web is called wisdom. It's called knowledge, call it information, call it whatever you want. But it's only a homonym when we say that this is Chochmah and Torah knowledge is Chochmah. It's two completely different words, a homophone, two completely different words that mean two completely different things. They just happen to sound the same. One is literal, one is colloquial, one is a borrowed term, but it's mamish, not the same thing. It's one is physical and one is spiritual, two completely different types of knowledge. Another thing we need to know is that despite the neshama's attraction to spiritual things, because the neshama is inside a physical body, that blocks, that impedes the neshama's vision, it impedes the neshama's desire even. Says the Alshech says that the neshama wants HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there's no question about it. Because if you take something and you break a little part off it, by nature, the little part wants to return to the whole. It means if you blow a little water, blow a little bubble, a little air inside water, the air wants to return to air. If you throw a piece of dirt up in the air, it wants to return to the dirt. Water wants to return to the whole complete body of water. That's the way nature works. And in neshama, in the same way that the bubble on the bottom of the water wants to go back to the air, and the water tries to get to all the rest of the water, the neshama tries to get to Hashem. However, the real intensity of the neshama's desire is blocked, because the neshama is connected, it's mingled with this guf. It's not just handcuffed to each other, it's more than that. It's intermingled. There's a little, the guf is the guf and the neshama is the neshama, but they have an effect on each other because they're together. The guf, the fact that the guf contains the neshama blinds the neshama a bit. The neshama cannot see the things that it normally would see because the body blinds it. It limits it. And it also reduces the cheshik that the neshama has for Hashem that normally would. The Alshech writes that no matter how much the neshama wants Hashem, Hashem wants the neshama more. Hashem's cheshek kaviyochel for us is much greater even than the neshama's cheshek for Hashem. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's desire for us is greater than our neshama's desire for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Also we need to know that not every spiritual thing is completely spiritual. So not every intellectual thing is intellectual. Not every spiritual thing is spiritual either. It's possible to misdirect the neshama's cheshek for Torah and for mitzvahs, such that because the neshama is inside a guf, because it's on in Olam Hazeh, it gets a bit confused a little, in the sense that it wants things also, besides Torah and mitzvahs, mistakenly. It's not the neshama, it's the fact that the neshama is mingled with the guf, namely, the yetzahara for gaiva, the pride, is a function of the soul, not a function of the body. If a person wants a nice, comfortable mattress, if a person wants tasty food, if a person wants excitement, all these could be bodily, materialistic delights. But pride, honor that a person gets, that's a spiritual delight. Geus, pride, comes from a very, very, very high place. Rabbeinu Tam writes that. Kotzker Rebbe once said that the primary Yetzirah of Gaiva is found in people that have already broken their Yetzirah, other taivas. If a person is less materialistic, if a person runs away from materialism, he's not connected to materialism, he's not tempted by materialism, he will still be tempted, even more so, by pride. Because pride, covet, is something that, it's a much more spiritual type of taiva. The Vilna Gaon writes, it's written in the name of the Vilna Gaon, that we know that sometimes a person gets reward on Olam Hazeh for his mitzvahs, Rachman Litzlan, and it gets taken off from the schar of Olam Haba. So the Gros said that the schar that gets reduced because a person in Olam Hazeh had material benefits is nothing compared to the schar that gets reduced because a person gets honor, a person gets covered in this world. Because covered is actually a hano for the neshama. It's much more similar to the type of hano that you get in the next world. And so, it's actually a spiritual benefit that you're receiving in this world. Honor and fulfillment of pride. It's much worse. It's a much, well, on one way, on one hand, it's a much more spiritual thing. But on the other hand, if you receive it, so then it's very possible that you're losing much more schar in Olam Haba than if you would have received material things. Yetzirah for geus, for pride, for covet, comes from a different place inside a person than the other yetzirahs. This could be pshat with the Maram Shif, writes that as a person gets older and older, the taiva for food and for money gets reduced, gets less and less, but the taiva for covet and honor gets more and more. I saw in Savart in a sefer Mishlei Chassidim that when a person is little, so what does a little kid want? What's his taiva? He wants lollipops. The person gets a little bigger, wants, I don't know, bicycles, big wheels. The person gets bigger, so a teenager, young teenager, they want, I don't know, clothing. When you get a little older, they want the keys to the car. And they get a little older, so they want a lot of money. And an adult, when they get even older, they want to be, I don't know, president of the United States. They want honor. They get older and more mature, they'll see all they want is Torah. But the highest, the last level of taiva that a person has is taiva for covet. That's as a person gets older, doesn't care so much about money, but honor is still, it becomes even stronger taiva than it was when the person was a kid. You see that? That younger people are more interested in money and luxuries, and older people, the same level of Yetzihara goes, the Yetzihara pulls them in the direction of covet and honor much more. You don't find a 16-year-old kid that wants to be president of a shul. It's just not there. But a 60-year-old man that could be like his meat and potato, that could be his life, you'll find that. 60-year-old man that wants his luxury, his sports cars, his this, his fancy home, maybe. But the younger people are much more into running after material fancy things. And it could be this is the reason. We said already previously in the name of the Kuzari and the name of Rabbi Chisdoy, a proof that there's such a thing as Hasharas HaNefesh, that the soul is eternal. Because as a person's body gets older and older, as time progresses, the body gets weaker and weaker. But the mind, which is the soul, which is the neshama, doesn't get weaker and weaker. On the contrary, person gets wiser and wiser, supposedly, hopefully. So if the body gets weaker and weaker and the mind gets stronger and stronger, clearly the mind is not from the same place as the body. And as the body gets weaker and weaker, the end of that getting weaker and weaker is death. But the mind was never affected by the weakness of the body. So the mind, meaning the soul, lives on. And if that's true, and if we're also going to throw into the mix the fact that it's the neshama that desires honor and pride, what comes out is that as a person gets older and older, when the body gets weaker and weaker, and the neshama is able to assert itself more and more relative to the body, it takes up more and more of the person's healthy lifestyle, it takes up more and more of person's strength, what's going to happen is that as a person gets older and older, because the neshama is stronger and stronger than the body, relatively, he's going to want honor more and more. Because honor is a desire of the neshama, not a desire of the body. And the Ramchal continues. V'timtza b'neihem milchomo. There is a great war between the guf and the neshama. Timtza b'neihem milchomo. There's a war between the guf and the neshama. V'oifen, such that, shim tigbar ha-neshama, if the neshama, wins, tis'ala hi, it will be elevated, v'tis'ala ha-guf imo, and the physical body will be elevated with the neshama. This is the first way of winning that tug of war, where you pull your enemy over the line with you. The neshama can actually pull the guf over to the side of holiness. V'yihye oisai ha-adam, and that person will be ha-mishtalein ba-shleimus ha-ma'usud. He will have perfection and be worthy of the perfection of the future. Meaning when Mashiach comes, is going to, this is a sheet of the Ramchal. It's Machloikis Rishonim. The Ramchal follows this shita, that our final reward is going to be when Mashiach comes, not in the world of Neshamas up in Shemayim. The body itself is going to join in the reward with the Neshama. And the way this works is, the Neshama sanctifies the body. Every mitzvah that the Neshama does affects the body. It elevates it, little by little, to the point where the body actually becomes spiritual and holy itself. See, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu would send Mashiach now, when we're not ready, it would be a very, very terrible thing. Because the world's is currently not ready for the spiritual energy, for the Kedusha, that's going to be here when Mashiach comes. If it would be, Mashiach would be here. But before the time, Kadosh Baruch Hu cannot kaviyochel send Mashiach before we prepare ourselves, our bodies, and the world itself for the spiritual energy that's going to happen when Mashiach comes. It's like taking away the machitza between the physical and the spiritual. It would be like being nuked. Simple as that. It's our job to work on the physical world, particularly on our physical bodies, by doing mitzvahs and by learning Torah, so that the physical bodies that we have and the world itself is elevated to the level that now it's ready to accept the spiritual energy, the holiness that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has in store for it, which is what we call Achris Hayamim, which happens through the vehicle of Melech HaMashiach. And that's what the Ramchal means, that a person who elevates his body, whose soul conquered the body, elevated it and sanctified it, and now the body is ready to be there when Mashiach comes, and to receive Olam Habo, that great pleasure that we learned is the whole purpose of this world, is going to happen when Mashiach comes. That's going to be real Olam Habo. Olam Habo, according to Ramchal, is not the Neshamas up in Shemayim. Olam Habo, the real Olam Habo, where we get a reward, is going to be when Mashiach comes, when we're still in our bodies. V'nyaniach ha'odom, and if a person allows, she'inatzach boi ha'choymer, that the materialistic part of him, the physical part of him, the dirt part of him, is the victor. Hine, behold, yishpal haguf, the body will have a downfall, the body will be brought down, v'sishpal nishmoso yimoy, and it will bring down the neshama with him. V'yihye oisoy ha'odom, and that person will be bilti hogun, unworthy, v'ashlemus, for the perfection of the future, meaning the days of Mashiach, v'nidche mimenu chas v'sholom, and he will not partake in it. Worst case scenario is ein loy chelik li olam habo. It will be like an animal. Animal has no chelik in olam habo, and a human being, if his animal part conquers his spiritual parts, that's how he ends up also. Ula odom hazeh, for such a person, yecholes lahashpil chomroy, this human being, this Adam that we are discussing here, has the ability to defeat the materialistic part of him with the sichloi, the intelligence, and the spiritual part of him, and the neshama, v'liknois shleimusoi k'moishe zachaynu, and to acquire perfection, as we stated above. Now, if you notice, remember, whenever you're reading the Derech Hashem, we have to be medayik in all the words. The Ramchal described the two possible victories, the victory of the guf and the victory in the neshama, two different ways. When he describes the victory of the neshama, he says, "Imtigbar haneshama," if the neshama will overcome, if the neshama will overpower the guf. However, when he describes the victory of the body over the neshama, he says, "Im yaniach ha'adam sheinatzach bo ha'chomer." If a person allows the physical part of him to overcome the spiritual. "Im yaniach ha'adam" means if a person just sits there and lets it happen. If a person lets the physical overcome the spiritual. So again, it's either A, the spiritual will overcome the physical, or B, he will allow the physical to overcome the spiritual. What does that mean? That means that the default value of a person in this world is that the physical will overcome the spiritual. That unless a person takes a proactive role in his life, the physical will overcome the spiritual. The physical can overcome the spiritual simply by menucha. Im yaniach ha'adam. If a person just sits and lets it happen, that's what's going to happen to him. Because the guf is on home territory, and the neshama is out of its territory. A human being has the ability to overcome the odds. I say the odds because the human being has many tools at his disposal that evens out the playing field. A person has Hashem giving him siyata d'shmaya. The Gemara says if Hashem would not assist a human being, the Yetzirah would just overcome him. Human being has Hashem giving him siyata d'shmaya. Without Hashem's siyata d'shmaya, a human being alone, left to his own machinations, would never be able to defeat the Yetzirah. Secondly, he has the Torah. The Torah was given to us as a special tool. Barasi Yetzirah, Barasi Torah Tavlin. I created the Yetzirah and I created Torah as its cure. The Torah is a special tool that was designed for us to use to defeat the Yetzirah, a special power. Now, before the Torah was given, it says in the Sfarim that before the Torah was given, the holy people, the tzaddikim, were manish moiser nefesh in an unimaginable way, because they defeated the Yetzirah without the benefit of Torah. That's our only hope. You know, in Yetzias Mitzrayim, it says the Jews, the Yidden, were in the Memtes Shari Tumah. If they would have stayed in Mitzrayim for one more second, they would have been in the 50th and they couldn't get out. We, however, it says, Sfarim writes, that before Mashiach comes, Ba'ikvus the Mashiach, we're going to be in the 50th. So the question is, if they wouldn't have gotten out, they had 600,000 prophets, 600,000 Nevi'im. They had a Moshe Rabbeinu, they had an Aaron HaKoyen. If they couldn't get out, how could we? The answer is, we have the Torah. They did this before Matan Torah. After Matan Torah, we have a tool that they didn't even have. They learned Torah, but it was before the giving of the Torah. It was a totally different concept. After Matan Torah, the Torah was given in this world as a tool for us to use to overcome the powers of materialism, the powers of evil in the world. And through that tool, we can be victorious. Now, why is it that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world in such a strange way, in such a way that we need His Siyata D'Shmaya in order to be able to survive? Why couldn't Hashem make the world in such a way that it's 50-50? If a person fights, he'll win. If not, not. So why does it have to be that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to come in and rescue a person? There are a lot of terutzim. In this week's parsha in the Divrei Yoel, there's a teretz. He says that it's in order to give people more schar. Based on Yismach Moshe, that even though HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives people Siyata D'Shmaya, it's still considered as if the person himself was a victor. Sometimes, like halach is, let's say, if you're somebody that works on commission, or maybe you're shadchan, that sometimes you do part, you make part of the shidduch, somebody else does part of the shidduch, and certain times you're considered the shadchan and you're entitled to the money, certain times you're not. The way the Siyata Dishmaya works is that even though HaKadosh Baruch Hu helps us out, and without him we never would have done it, but we're considered the shadchanim. We got help, but we're considered the shadchanim. So we get reward for a much more difficult shidduch to make, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu made the Yetzirah so strong that we need Siyata Dishmaya. But nevertheless, Hashem gives us full credit for overcoming the Yetzirah. If Hashem would just make the world in a way that we'd be able to overcome it, that would be fine. But what we would be overcoming would be a lot less than what we're doing now with Siyata Dishmaya. And therefore, we have a much greater schar now. But unless a person takes mamish a proactive role, there's no way he's going to be able to win this war. And now, at this point, we'll take questions. Anyone have any questions on this topic and other topics? Yes. Right, question. If it's intrinsic in the nature of a person that his neshama is always struggling and always wants more things, how is it possible for a person to be a sameach b'chelkoi? How is he going to overcome his, he overcome his body, but in order to do that, the chayra, you'd have to overcome your neshama. How does that work? The answer is that the caveman has to realize that the princess is not interested in dead rabbits. And when he does that, he says, look, you know what? I can't completely satisfy you here, but I'm not going to try to do counterproductive things. We're going to try to get you back home to the king. We're going to try to keep you in the best shape possible. We're going to try that you should remain a princess now and forever. So too, a person has to understand that all his attempts at acquiring stuff, physical stuff, is all a misdirected venture. It's not going to satisfy him. It's useless, so you may as well stop. You may as well open the Sfarim. You may as well start learning Torah. You may as well start doing mitzvahs, because that's going to give you pleasure in Olam Haba and in Olam Hazeh. You know what the Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos? Kachi darko shel Torah. The following is the way of the Torah. Pas b'melach toichal, you eat bread and water. Umayim b'mishurim tishte, you will drink putrid waters. Al ha'aretz tishan, you will sleep on the ground. Then it says, if you do this, imata oisekein, ashrecho v'toivloch. Fortunate are you, and how good is your lot. Ashrecho ba'olam hazeh, v'toivloch lo'olam haba. Not only you think you're sacrificing olam hazeh for olam haba, it's not so. You're fortunate even in olam hazeh, because you have a calm soul, a satisfied soul, a fulfilled soul. If you're going to try to just fulfill your soul by getting money and riches, you speak to guys, teenagers, 20-year-old guys, I speak to them all the time. What's your goal? I want to drive a car like that. They point to a Mercedes. When they get the Mercedes, they'll want a car like something else. I said here several times a story. I have a friend who had a father-in-law, very, very wealthy man. His father-in-law was a very wealthy man. Very wealthy, like $1 billion. And this man woke up before 6 every morning to get to work early. A man about 70 years old. Came home about 10 o'clock at night every night, sometimes 11. He had a couple of helicopters he owned, a whole fleet of cars, this level type person. And son-in-law I know asked him, so when are you going to retire? Had enough money to support his children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren forever. When are you going to retire, he asked him. So his answer was, when I'm bigger than Edgar Bronfman, then I'll retire. Well, this man is not in this world anymore, and he never got bigger than Edgar Bronfman. You know what? If he would have, he would have found somebody else that he wanted to be bigger than. If this person wanted Olam Hazeh, the guy with all his cars and his helicopters and his homes and his witches, if he wanted Olam Hazeh, he would have retired, he would have opened some svarim, and he would have stopped trying to satisfy his body, which was anyway old and decrepit, a 70-year-old man. What is he going to do with his body? And start satisfying his neshama, because his neshama is crying out. His body is getting lower and lower, weaker and weaker, worse and worse, and the neshama that's getting strong, the intellect getting stronger and stronger, he's ignoring it. He's not going to be happy. That's how we reconcile it. That's Eizeh Washa Samech Bechelka. It's totally in a person's Bechira if he realizes his psychological problems and he does something about it. That's it. Any other questions? Yes? Right. Torah, Barasi Yetzahara, Barasi Torah Tavlin. The Torah is the solution to the Yetzahara. That's what Chazal tell us. It helps with the external one too. It helps with everything. I mean, to a certain extent, the Malach HaKadosh Baruch was always going to give you Nisyonis. So even if you beat this Yetzahara again, I tell you, the Yetzahara is not our enemy. You know what it says in the Torah? The Yetzirah is very good. I'll explain to you how to look at the Yetzirah. You don't want to get rid of it in that sense. The Yetzirah to us is like a sparring partner. You have a guy who wants to grow up to be a boxer. So he wants to defeat the enemy. So how does he train? You get a guy who's better than you at boxing, and you go into the ring with him, and he'll fight you. And he'll knock you down. And he doesn't want you to get knocked. He doesn't want to beat you. He wants you to get up and knock him down. And when you're good enough to get up and knock him down, he's going to try a little harder till he knocks you down again. And if you get up and knock him down, he's going to try harder and harder until you get better and better and better. That's the Yetzirah. He's not your enemy. The Yetzirah is knocking you down because he wants to train you to be strong. And the Yetzirah wants you to win. And when this guy becomes the biggest prize fighter, guess who's going to be sitting in the front row cheering on the fact that this guy's victory over all the enemy boxers? It's going to be the sparring partner sitting right in there. And the Yetzirah in Olam Haba is going to be the one cheering us on. He's going to be the one most proud of us because he did Hashem's work to train us. And now somebody that doesn't understand this is going to look and is going to say, excuse me, sir. Why are you happy when this guy wins his matches? You kept trying to defeat him. No, I didn't keep trying to defeat him. I kept trying to make him strong enough to defeat me. And when he got strong enough to defeat me, I tried harder and I wanted him to be strong enough to defeat even a tougher foe, and a tougher foe, and a tougher foe. I was just trying to make him strong. The Yetzirah is only trying to make us strong. It's not like Lahavdil, the Goyisha versions of the Yetzirah, the Satan, they have no idea what they're talking about. No, the Mamish. We have no idea, it's shteirishuyas, it's nonsense. The Yetzirah is a shliach of Hashem, whose job in this world is to make us strong. The Yetzirah comes, and it's like saying, well, how do I get rid of my sparring partner, because I'm falling down too much. Sheva yipol tzadik v'kam. The tzadik falls 7 times, and then he gets up, and he smashes the Yetzirah. And the Yetzirah wants him to get up and smash him. And Yetzirah tries hard. You don't want to get rid of that Yetzirah. Kol ha-godl mechaveira yitzrei godl minu. What you want to do is get rid of the other Yetzirah. Because besides a sparring partner, there are other obstacles to a boxer's victory. Number one, he's lazy. Number two, he likes junk food. Number three, he'd rather be in the movies. So these natural base taivas, you got to get rid of. They'll both cause you to lose. The junk food will cause you to lose, and if the sparring partner will also cause you to lose. You'll be knocked down because of both, but there's a big difference. The junk food, you're a real loser. The sparring partner knocks you down, that's part of your training. So if the Yetzirah of Chumrius, your body, your physical body, you want to conquer that Yetzirah. You want to become a spiritual person, you want to become a disciplined person, you want to become a person that doesn't run after Olam Hazeh, you want to become a person that wants Olam Haba. But don't expect that as long as you're in this world, the Yetzirah is going to leave you alone. Because even if you train properly and you eat properly and you wake up properly and you're a soldier, you're still going to have that sparring partner that's going to train you. So those two yetzaharas are two completely different things. The chumrius of a person is your enemy. That is your enemy. The first level nesoyin is to beat that enemy. The first level nesoyin is for you to eat properly, sleep properly, discipline yourself. The second level nesoyin is now you have to beat your sparring partner. He's not your enemy. Of course, you get reward by beating both yetzaharas, but it's two completely different things. Anything else? Yeah. Question. We describe Tumah as the koiches hachitzoinim that enter a human body after the neshama leaves. But isn't Tumah also associated with other things? There's Tumas Nida, Tumas Leida, when somebody has a baby. So how do we understand all Tumas being one thing? The answer is, as a general rule, it's all the same. Because it means what there is a vacuum where life was, that's where the koiches chitzoinim come. And tumas nida is the same thing, it's potential life. And so the koiches chitzoinim come there. Tumas leida, when there was life inside a person and now it's vacant, the koiches atumah come. And that's why, when a woman has a girl baby, she's tumah for longer than when she has a male baby. Why? Because the female baby is herself a receptacle for life. And the vacancy that's left when a female baby leaves is greater life vacancy than when a male baby leaves. Tumah in general is always when life vacates, tumah comes in. It could be physical life, or it could be like nida life, potential life, or it could be a life inside a life, but it's always related to that. Now there's other thing, tumas sheretz, and this, but that's another story. But these type of tumas, this is how it works. It's always a result of the vacancy of life. Anything else? Question, if the guf, the neshama leaves the body, what is there in the guf that's attracting the tumah? The answer is, since the neshama was in the body, it still has an effect on the body. And a guf that had a neshama in it is still kind of has some residue, not residue neshama, but it's affected by the body. It becomes a bit higher. And once the neshama is left, it's like the mashal he gives, the Shemi Shmuel, is like a cup of wine. Once you empty it, there's some residue, little wine, and that's what attracts the bugs. If it was 100% purely clean glass, nothing would be attracted. So too, a body that had a neshama is not the same as a body that never had a neshama. A body that had a neshama is forever affected by the fact that it had a neshama in it. And that, therefore, the neshama leaves some kind of residue on the body that attracts the koiches hachitzoinim. Or, in another way, these are just mesholim. It's the same thing. That the fact that a neshama was there leaves an empty space, and it's the empty space itself that the koiches hachitzoinim are, a place that housed life. Koiches hachitzoinim always attack life, and they're always attracted to those places that house life. The body over here housed life. And then the koiches hachitzoinim are always just the neshama keeps it away. The koiches hachitzoinim, maybe they're not smart enough to understand that there's no reason to attack this thing. Both those mesholim are the same thing. There's something, bottom line is, because the neshama had life in it, because the guf had life in it, that's what attacks the koiches hachitzoinim.